Everybody has a story, and everyone's story matters. I truly believe that there are few things in life that are more powerful and important than us sharing our stories with the world. Here on Talk That Talk podcast, that is exactly what we're all about. Tune in each week to hear the story of my guest, myself, or honestly, something else entirely. My hope is that you will listen and leave feeling encouraged and that you know that your story matters. Hello, everyone. It has been a while, but we're back. The last few months have been really crazy, and I would love to tell you all about it. And maybe you care, maybe you don't. That's okay. I am in the process of becoming a living liver donor, and I wanted to talk about what that experience has been like for anyone who has thought about donating, or becoming a living donor, maybe you know someone who is in need of a transplant and they are being put on the transplant list and you're thinking about coming forward and donating, whether it's a kidney or a portion of your liver or something else, I don't know. And you're wondering what it's like. I wanted to document this process a little bit and just share what I've experienced so far. So this is going to be about all I've experienced prior to surgery. So my surgery is scheduled for September 14th, which is 2 weeks from tomorrow. And so we're almost there. I haven't had my pre-op appointment yet, so that won't be covered in this. But for the most part, I will talk about everything that's happened up to the surgery, and then I will check back in after the surgery and let you know how that has gone too. So I hope you enjoy. Here we go. Okay, so how this all transpired. The first thing that had to happen, obviously, was my grandfather. Actually, my step-grandfather, which is kind of weird to say. He's just my grandfather, but he has been sick for about 7 years now and was told, I think around January of this year, that he would qualify to be put on the transplant list, the living transplant list. I believe there's two different lists. Like, there's a living transplant list and a deceased transplant list. I'm not positive, though. I feel like I've heard both things from people. So they told him basically this was his last resort to feeling better. He's had a lot of issues and has, you know, end stage liver disease. So he's not sick enough to be on the deceased donor list and probably would not, you know, he would probably die waiting for a deceased donor organ, liver. Because the way that works is you have to be sick enough to kind of get pushed to the top. There's a lot of people waiting on the list. I think the number for livers is something like 14,000. I would have to double check that, but I'm pretty sure it's somewhere in that area. Yeah, so a lot of people die waiting for a liver to become available. So the living donor transplant is being pushed a lot more these days, from what I've been told, because that way it completely takes you off the list. You don't have to wait for someone to die, basically, for you to get an organ. You can get a healthy organ from someone who's living. And it's also really great because a lot of times, from what I've heard, again, I mean, I'm not an expert in any of this. I'm not a doctor, but just from what I've learned in this process is that with a living donor, the organ is healthier because, you know, they're still alive. It's functioning right up until, you know, it's literally taken out and then put in the recipient. So they've found a lot of success with that. And we are getting this procedure done at UPMC, which we're really, really, really lucky to be near such a great facility because the team there has really great success with transplants, and the Transplant Institute there is really, really great. And they are one of the leading programs in the country. They've been doing this a long time. They have very, very high success rates. They've had, you know, very, very low percentage of any complications. So it's really reassuring to know that we are getting this done in a great, great facility. So anyway, that was the first step. He was approved to be put on the list. And then the transplant team basically tells him, okay, you got to find a living donor. So my grandparents, I don't think they really asked anyone. I think they told our family that he was on the list and he was approved to receive a transplant, but they did not ask any of us to donate. And I think he was approved in January. So, you know, the family knew, we knew he was, you know, needing a live donor, but no one was really being asked to do it. And around May, we were talking about it at dinner one night, about how he's still on the list and he needs a living donor. And I just felt like, why not me? You know, so I came forward and said, I would like to do this. And, at first my mom especially was like, I don't know that I want you to do this. And understandably was kind of, you know, anxious about me donating a portion of my liver and undergoing major surgery. But I am an adult, so, and she respects that, obviously. So I thought about it for a while, prayed about it for a week or so, and came back and said, no, I'm really sure I want to do this for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously, is he needs a liver. This could save his life. This could give him a better quality of life for 10, 15, maybe even 20 years. He's only 70. So he could still live a long time and have great years being able to do things he hasn't been able to do in a long time. Because he's been, you know, just slowly getting worse and suffering more and more. So that's number one. Number two, though, is that me being younger, being single, not having kids, you know, it's a lot easier for me to just pick up and take time off work. I'm younger, so my body would most likely heal better than some of my family members who are older, and I don't have a husband or kids depending on me to take care of them. And I think it'd be really hard for someone, you know, a parent, or, you know, if you're taking care of someone to do this, you know, that's a lot of other responsibility, whereas I have myself to take care of, and that's pretty much it. So I'm in a really great position to be able to help. And I just wanted to, you know, I think we all know one of the best, if not the best feelings you can have as a person is helping other people. You know, that's like a universal thing that humans, and I just felt like it was one of those things where like, I got to do this. This is something I'm meant to do. So the first step after we had kind of decided, yeah, I'm going to go forward with this, was to get in touch with the transplant coordinator, my grandfather's transplant coordinator. And we got in touch with her and she said, all right, fill out this application online. Now this is UPMC's transplant center. So if you're getting this done somewhere else, they may have a different process. I'm not sure. At least at UPMC though, the first step in this is to go online. They have a website with an online application that you fill out, mostly about your health, your history. We get really great joy and happiness out of helping other people. Right away, as I was filling out the application, when I was done and submitted it, it said I was disqualified because my BMI was too high. So that was unfortunate. I was pretty disappointed about that, because I didn't think that I was that overweight. Now, I did know that I needed to lose weight, so I was not disillusioned about that, but I did not think that I was so overweight that it would stop me from donating a portion of my liver. So I think a lot of people probably wouldn't know what to do after that, because it doesn't give you any, you know, it didn't give me any direction on, if you want to know how much weight you have to lose, call this number, or here's the BMI you need to get down to, or blah, 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 blah. None of that information was listed, which was a little frustrating. So I was calling people, finally got in touch with someone at the Transplant Institute and was like, hey, I was disqualified because of my BMI, but it didn't tell me what I need to get down to. So how much weight do I need to lose? Like, what do I need to do? And she was basically like, based on your height, you need to lose about 20 pounds. So lose 20 pounds and then come back to us. So that was pretty discouraging. It was all on me at that point. She was just like, we can't bring you in for testing until you lose the weight. So lose the weight, we'll see you then. But I became determined to lose the weight to do this, because that was not something I was going to, if I could not let this stop me from doing this and being able to help in this way. So I started, you know, really tuning up my diet, exercising, just trying to get back to healthy habits that I have had before, but have just kind of lost along the course of the last year. And again, this is something I knew I needed to do anyway. This was now just really great motivation to lose weight, because it was no longer about me. Probably a couple months go by, because we're looking at like mid-July now, and I'm probably down around 7 or 8 pounds. And a different lady from the transplant center calls me. Not the same girl I reached out to before. There's a lot of different people in this process. So just be aware of that. If you are going through this as a donor, you are going to talk to so many different people, and it's crazy. There's so many people on your team. But I hear from this lady who says she's my donor coordinator. And she says, hey, you know, we know that you aren't down to this weight yet, but we still want to bring you in for testing. And I think, I don't know this for sure, but I think part of that was because my grandfather was admitted to the hospital. So what I'm thinking happened behind the scenes is that his team probably talked to the transplant center and said, hey, does this guy have any living donors that have come forward? And they found my name and said, yes, one, but she's overweight. Can we bring in for testing? And they were probably like, yeah, let's do it. So they call me, this is probably mid-July, and say, we're going to bring you in for testing. Sweet. Okay. So 2 weeks later, I go in for testing. My mom and I drive down to Pittsburgh, and this was on a Wednesday, and it's an all-day affair. So, I mean, it's like you get every test done under the sun. You get there, you get blood work done first thing in the morning. We had to get there, I think, at like 7:30 in the morning. You get blood work done, and then you sit in this room, and it's kind of like speed dating. My coordinator comes in, talks to me, she leaves the room. Then the pharmacist comes in, talks to me. You know, here are some medications you may be taking after the surgery. Here's how you reach us, da 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 da. She leaves. Then the social worker comes in. She talked to me a lot about like programs that could help us out financially. Now, this is an important thing. If you come forward as a donor, you are not financially obligated for anything. The recipient's insurance covers everything. Mostly everything, I should say. It doesn't cover your travel costs to and from the hospital or from, you know, to doctor's visits. It does not cover any visits that you have with your doctor back home after your surgery. But it does cover all the tests you take that day, all your blood work, your MRI, your CT scan, your EKG, your x-rays, all of that. It covers all the meetings with all the doctors, the surgeon, everything. Obviously covers the surgery, and it covers your stay in the hospital post-surgery and your follow-up appointments about, you know, the transplant. That is, I think, a great thing, and I think that's great incentive for people to come forward, because I think a lot of people would feel discouraged if they, you know, there's no way that most people would be able to pay for this. So anyway, we meet with the social worker. We meet with one of the hepatologists, which is a liver doctor. He did like an ultrasound on my liver. Said it looks pretty good. Told me I had tiny ribs. So that was interesting. I met with the surgeon who drew basically a map of the liver for me and explained how the surgery was going to work. So he explained how our liver is broken up into a right lobe and a left lobe, and they'd be taking the right lobe of my liver. It's the bigger portion of your liver. And what's crazy is that once they take that away, my liver, what's remaining, will grow back. It's not like my liver will grow back a right lobe. The left lobe will just grow bigger. And it should be near 80% capacity of, you know, what it was in like 6 to 8 weeks after the surgery, which is insane. And the same thing will happen with my grandpa. So they'll put, my, you know, right lobe, I guess, into his body and connect all the veins and stuff. It's insane. And that will grow bigger in his body as well. And it should literally help everything that he's dealing with right now. I mean, he has the very classic symptoms of liver disease, jaundice, swelling. He gets disoriented, he falls, he's really weak, he sometimes doesn't want to eat. But I think mostly what has been hard is mentally speaking. I mean, when you're sick for so long and there's nothing you can do about it and nothing works, it starts to break you down. And I think this has been giving him hope, and hopefully it's not in vain. Hopefully this will work, this will go according to plan, this liver will take, and he will experience relief in every area of his body right now. So that is what we're hoping and praying for. Okay, so back to the day of testing. Speed dating. I'm meeting with all these people. I underwent 2 psych evals. I don't know if most people go under 1 or if everyone meets with 2 psychiatrists, but I met with 2. And that was honestly the part I was most nervous about, because I definitely have a history of mental illness and have, you know, history of treatment, partial hospitalization program. So I was nervous that they would disqualify me based on my psychiatric history. But I was just honest with them about my depression, about where I was at with it. You know, I have been stable for a while now, honestly, over 6 months, I would say. And my therapist and my psychiatrist both knew about this process. They were excited for me, and they had to write letters basically saying, you know, what my diagnosis was, what was our treatment plan, how's it been going, and essentially, do they sign off on this? And both of them did, which was very awesome. But the psych evals were definitely the most nerve-wracking thing for me. And they ask you about everything. I mean, they ask you about your childhood trauma. They ask you about a lot. So, it was hard, but it was okay. The first one, I think I like to say that they played good cop, bad cop, because the first psychiatrist was so like, yeah, you're going to do great. I think you're doing this, like, you have a great support system. You're going to do awesome. I'm so excited for you. And then the second psychiatrist was like, well, are you sure you really want to do this? Like, no one pressured you. No one asked you to do this, and you felt like you had to. Have you seen the scars? Like, have you seen the scars that you're going to have from the surgery? Like, what if you want to wear a crop top or a bikini? And I was like, I won't want to wear a crop top or a bikini. That's not a concern of mine. But even if I do, this is a scar I'm going to be able to be proud of. You know, I have scars I'm not proud of. This is not going to be one of them. But it was very like night and day. The first psychiatrist was very like, I felt like on my side and rooting for me. And the second one was almost like, just kind of really questioning me and like, I don't want to say interrogating, but everything I answered, it was like, it wasn't good enough for her, and she had to dig a little deeper. And I get it. The whole point of these evaluations is to make sure that you're not being coerced. Someone hasn't offered to pay you. Someone isn't pressuring you. Because a lot of people, I think too, will sign up to become a living donor, and then they get there and they realize what it actually entails, and they're like, no, I don't want to do this. And the whole way through, which I think this is really awesome, the whole way through, your whole team tells you, if at any point, even if the morning of the surgery, you decide you don't want to go through with this, you can tell us, and we will basically come up with a medical reason that you can't do it, that you can tell people, so that you don't have to go around and tell people, yeah, I flaked out, or I just couldn't do it, or I didn't want to do it. They'll literally give you, you know, a reason. Like, they said my cholesterol was too high. I don't know, I'm making that up. But they will back you, you know, they will give you an out, basically. Which I think is really, really cool that they do that. And they tell you that multiple times throughout the day, that, you know, you can always change your mind. There's no pressure. It's totally up to you. But they really just want to make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. You're not doing it to make someone like you or love you, or I don't know. They want to make sure you're in it for the right reason. So yeah, that was probably the most nerve-wracking part for me. But I met with one of the hepatologists, the surgeon, the psychiatrist, the social workers. Then there was this lady who was called a donor advocate. And her role was to advocate for me. So whatever she thought was the best thing for me, that's what her job was, to communicate that. And a lot of her questions were similar to the psychiatrist and the social workers, just about my history, reasons I'm doing this, family dynamics, what, you know, my job, support that I have, all that kind of stuff. And after we met with everyone, which, you know, took about 4 hours, I would say, we then went to get the test done. And that was the rest of the day. That was probably like another 4 hours. So you get a chest x-ray, which was so fast. And then I had a CT scan, which was pretty fast as well. I had an MRI, which took forever. I was probably in there for like 45 minutes, and I had never gotten an MRI before. I was not a huge fan of it. Not even because I'm claustrophobic. You're in this kind of tube thing. But just because you have to stay very, very still. And I had to lay with my arms over my head. And so my shoulders were like cramping, and you can't move. And then your nose is itchy, and you're like, I can't itch my nose. And then you want to crack your knuckles, but you're like, I can't really do that either. You can't move at all. So that was just uncomfortable. Then after that, I had an EKG, which took literally seconds. So after all that was done, we got to leave, and we got home at like 8:30. It was a long day. Then the next day we got up and we went back, because I met with a different hepatologist, which is a liver doctor, to talk about a weight loss plan. So at this point I had probably lost around 10 pounds, but they wanted me to lose another 10 pounds. So I met with this doctor, and we talked about a weight loss program. They have a program that they usually give to recipients, I think, among other, I think mostly the recipients, yeah, that need to lose weight in order to undergo surgery. They do this program with them a lot. And maybe other patients too who aren't getting transplants, I'm not sure. I know that I'm one of maybe 5 donors that have gone through this program. There's not a lot of donors that go through it. I don't know if that's because a lot of donors don't lose weight to go through the surgery, or if they just lose weight on their own. I'm not sure. But essentially what it is, it's a shake diet. It's called Optifast, and it's made by Nestle, I believe. I don't know that I needed to include that information, but just so you know. So I met with the doctor, and I talked to the nutritionist on the phone a few days later. That visit was not covered by his insurance, because that was for me. That was something that, you know, it was for this, for the transplant, but it's not something that like everyone goes through. So that's something that I have to pay for. Now I am on the shake diet, but before I get to that, I guess, after those 2 days of testing and meeting with the doctor, so that was on a Wednesday and Thursday, they told us that we should hear the following Tuesday if I was approved or not. So that was the most nerve-wracking week, because I just really wanted to be approved so bad. I was working really hard. I had really prayed about this. I really felt like I wanted to do this, and I was worried that I was going to be disqualified, and I had to kind of make peace with that. That was one of the things that both psychiatrists asked me, was if you are not able to do this, how are you going to feel? And I mean, I was like, honestly, I'm going to be sad. I'm going to be disappointed. I mean, it's going to suck, but I just want to be able to look back and say that I did everything I could. And as long as I can do that, I'll be able to have peace with it. So we were waiting that whole week, and I was just counting down the days till Tuesday, or, you know, Wednesday, when I could hear if I was approved or not. So the week goes by, and my coordinator had actually told me, you may hear the following Tuesday or in 2 weeks, because what has to happen is all of your tests have to come back, your blood work, all your scans. I had to also provide a lot of past medical records of previous operations, my letters from my therapist and my psychiatrist, among some other things. So all those had to be sent over and looked at. and they meet every Tuesday, apparently. I like to call it the liver committee. I don't really know what you call it, but all these people sit in a room Tuesdays at 3 p.m. and they will present the donor. So they have to have everything in order before they can present you. So luckily we got all my records in, all the tests came back before that following Tuesday, which I can't even remember the date now, but it was a couple weeks ago. And they presented me to the committee, I guess, and I'm not sure exactly what goes on in that meeting, but basically they, you know, the doctors, the psychiatrists, the nurses, everyone talks with each other. How did this go with you? How did she respond to this? What did you think? Do you think she should be approved? Should we go through with this? Is this the best thing for her? And I don't know if they vote or what they do, but they decide if you are approved to become a donor. And I will say the one thing, because a lot of people will ask, well, are you a match? And with that, like, you have to be matched in blood type, but I don't know that there's any other thing that they actually match. My blood type is O positive, so I'm able to donate to anyone, I believe. But I think other than that, as long as your blood types are compatible, you just have to be healthy enough. Your liver has to be healthy enough. And that is, I guess, what qualifies you as a match. So I just wanted to point that out because a lot of people will ask me, well, are you a match? And I would have probably asked the same thing, but really, your blood type has to match. And then after that, I think it's mostly like you have to be healthy enough. Your liver has to be, you know, a viable option to donate. Once they decide if you're approved or denied, then the recipient's doctors are in the room as well. So my grandfather's doctors were in the room and they'll say, okay, who's so-and-so's doctor? They'll stand up and they'll say, when does he need this surgery? And they could be like, he needs this surgery yesterday, or he's doing all right. We could maybe wait a month or so. But they decided to, you know, he needed it as soon as possible. And so they call me on Tuesday afternoon. My donor coordinator called me right after the meeting, which I was really thankful for. And homegirl gets on the phone though, and she's like, hi, Brittany, it's so-and-so from the UPMC Transplant Center. And I'm like, oh no, they're going to deny me. This is terrible. And she goes, I just wanted to let you know that you were approved for, I was like, you could have led with that or had a cheerier tone, but I was approved, which I was so relieved to hear. I mean, it was like just tons of weight lifted off my shoulders because this has been months in the making at this point of just eating, sleeping, breathing, trying to get healthy. You know, I stopped drinking for multiple reasons, but this was a big reason so that my liver can be healthy enough to donate. You know, I started eating well, working out, I was sleeping more. I was really, really trying to get healthy so I could donate my liver, portion of my liver. So it was great news. And so I told my parents, obviously we called my grandparents and told them. They were really excited. And that was about 2 weeks ago. When they called me too, they were like, when do you want to do the surgery? And I was like, when's your next available date? And they said the 14th. And I said, let's do that. So they said, okay, well, we do approve you, but you got to lose 10 more pounds. You could probably do it now. You're healthy enough to do it now, but we'd really like you to get down 10 more pounds than your BMI would be, the level we wanted it to be at. And they do that because you can have fatty cells in your liver, which I didn't, but it still decreases the risk. It gives you a better, stronger recovery. It's just better if you are not overweight. And again, I didn't think I was super overweight, but I did need to lose weight anyway. So, you know, it's better to be at a healthier weight for so many reasons, but especially when you're getting surgery. I was like, yep, that's fine. Get me on the shake diet and we'll do it. And that is where we're at now. So this will be my second week. Starting tomorrow will be my second week on this shake diet. And in 3 weeks, they want me to lose 10 pounds. So I've got 2 more weeks to go and I'm down 4 pounds. So I've got 6 more to go. Shake diet is pretty crazy though. I mean, it's medically prescribed, so I'm getting all the nutrients I need. it's qualified as a meal replacement because you're getting all the nutrients and minerals and stuff that you need in these shakes. But I have a shake for breakfast with almond milk, and then I have a shake for lunch. I can have a bar. They send bars as well, and the bars are pretty good. They also send soups that you can have for lunch, and I could not get that soup down. I mean, it was disgusting. It's like a chicken-flavored powder that you pour in a bowl, and then you pour hot water in it and mix it together, but it doesn't mix well, so you're eating chunks of chicken-flavored powder in hot water, and it's disgusting. So I X'd that out real quick and told the nutritionist, don't send me any more soup. I will do the shakes and the bars. So anyway, I have a shake for breakfast, a shake for lunch. I have a bar as a snack. I drink coffee and tea throughout the day, usually, but, you know, obviously water, lots of water. And then for dinner, they graciously allow me to have a 500 calorie meal. Obviously has to be balanced with a carb, a protein, veggie, healthy fats, and that is it. So I am allowed to have 1200 calories a day, which is very hard. It may not sound hard, but it's hard. And you know, if you go over 50 or whatever, it's not a huge deal, but right around 1200 calories is where I'm supposed to be. So I've been taking that very seriously, and it has definitely been working. And they, have never had someone who hasn't had success with this program. So that is really reassuring as well. And I definitely feel hungry. There's definitely times throughout the day where like you push the wrong button and, you know, I feel really irritable or hungry, or I've gotten headaches. But it's getting easier. I will say every day it gets easier. I feel less hungry. As long as I'm drinking water, I don't get headaches as much. I try to eat my snacks. I try to make sure that they are like high in protein so that they fill me up more. And I try to make sure I get a lot of protein in my dinner so that I don't feel hungry at night. But the hardest part is like midday. I do pretty well in the morning and I do okay at night. It's in the middle of the day that I struggle sometimes. I kind of had to stop working out on top of that because I was working out pretty hard. I was working out like for an hour a day, and I really enjoy exercising, so it wasn't, you know, something that I dreaded doing, but there's no way I have the energy for that on the amount of calories I'm getting right now. So they told me that they want me to walk a couple miles a day, and that's the only exercise I should do. So I try to walk at least 3 miles a day, you know, throughout the day. I don't know how many steps that is, but if I don't get it just in the day, I try to go for a walk at night. And I've been losing half a pound a day, basically, which is insane. I have never lost weight this fast before, and it's really hard. Like, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, give me those shakes. And I'm like, you have no idea. It's really hard, but it's working and it's great. And I would never recommend anything this extreme to anyone unless it was for this reason. You know, this is a medical weight loss program. I'm not taking diet pills. I'm not just doing something on my own. I'm being monitored, I'm being asked, I'm being called by the nutritionist and checked in with. And so, yes, but it is definitely not a walk in the park. It is hard, but it is working. So I, like I said, have about 6 more pounds to lose in the next 2 weeks, and I should be able to make the goal weight before the surgery, which is great. So that's where we are right now. I go in for my pre-op appointment this Wednesday. They'll take more blood work. I'll meet with the surgeon again to just kind of go over the plan again, of what the actual surgery looks like. It's gonna be crazy. I mean, it's a major surgery. They say it's somewhere between 6 to 8 hours usually. For the recipient, it may be longer. I'm not sure. But basically what happens is I go in an hour before him. They slice me open. It's pretty big incision. It's kind of like starts in the middle of your chest, comes down, and then it almost looks like an L shape. They will, yeah, cut off the right lobe. I don't know all that they do, but then I know when they put it in the recipient, they attach all the portal vein and all the, it's insane. I watched a surgery on YouTube and it was wild. But I cannot describe to you what happens because I just don't have the vocabulary. But yeah, the surgery is about, I think, anywhere between 5 to 8 hours. I will be, I think, in the ICU the rest of the day after that, maybe the day after the surgery. I will be in a lot of pain. I've heard that mostly I'll be in pain. My ribs will be really, really painful because they like lift up your ribs or push them back or something. I don't know. I get nauseous thinking about what they do to your ribs, to get to your liver. They don't break your ribs or anything. I don't think, but they just move everything around. So you're in pain. I will probably be in the hospital for anywhere between 3 to 7 days. I think if you do really well, I could go home on day 4. If there's some minor complications, I could be in there for a week. It just depends. My grandpa will probably be in there for like 20 to 30 days, so it'll be much longer for him. But then after that, I can go home. I am going to be living with my parents for a few weeks after, which I'm thankful for. You know, it's not easy living, going back to live at home once you've moved out, but I'm very thankful that I have my family so close by that can support me and help me. But I will not be able to walk up steps for a month or so. I'm not allowed to drive for 6 weeks. Can't lift anything over 10 pounds for 6 weeks. I have to take about a month off of work. Even though I work from home and I work a desk job, they still recommended 4 weeks out of work. I don't know a lot about the process of recovery, but that's what I've been told so far. And again, my liver should, you know, regenerate basically within 6 to 8 weeks. I will not be able to have alcohol for 6 weeks after the surgery, which makes total sense. I can't have like fried food or lots of heavy cream after. They really stress that it's important to keep a healthy weight after you donate a portion of your liver because they don't really know the effects of weight gain on a regenerated liver. So I'm going to have to really maintain my health and continue to lose weight, which I would love to do anyway. But again, this is just a great push and a great motivation and encouragement to do that. My grandfather, I'm not totally sure what his recovery process will look like. I just know he'll be in the hospital for, you know, maybe a month or so after the surgery. But it should honestly help everything, which would be incredible. So that is where we are right now. The surgery is in 2 weeks. I'm counting down the days to when I can eat real stuff again, but mostly counting down the days till we can get the surgery over with. I know that my mom is anxious, obviously, about me undergoing major surgery voluntarily, but everyone's been very supportive, my mom included. They're happy for me. They're happy for my grandpa. I'm very excited. I don't really feel nervous yet. I'm more nervous about getting a COVID test than I am about getting the surgery. We have to go down the day before the surgery to get a COVID test, which I am dreading. Like literally, I just hate anything with my nose. So, I would really love to be put out, like put asleep for this, but that will not happen. So yeah, I gotta really stay safe these next 2 weeks so I don't get COVID. Because I can't risk anything canceling the surgery, and we got to just continue with the weight loss, which is going really well. I'm really proud of myself. It's been really hard, but totally worth it. I think the best thing about this process for me has been, you know, it is for my grandpa, of course, but it's also for everyone else in my family. It's for my Grammy to have her husband for a few more years. It's for my, my brothers to have their grandpa around, for my stepdad to have his dad around longer. It's really been a collective effort, and my family has said they'll help out with any bills I have. You know, I should be able to qualify for short-term disability, but they're still going to help me out. They're going to take care of me. I have a lot of support going into this, and I'm doing my part. My part is that I'm donating a portion of my liver. but everyone else is doing their part and everyone is getting behind this. And everyone, I may maybe have like the most, I guess, I don't know, I don't want to say glamorous, but glorified part in it, you know, like it's easy to be like, wow, you're donating your liver. And yes, I am. And it's awesome. And it's cool and brave and all that jazz, whatever. But also, I think anyone would do this for someone that they care about and they love. I mean, it's not like I'm super special, because I mean, people do this for strangers. Literally, my advocate was telling me, I can't remember the exact number, but she said somewhere around 50% of donors are like truly like just altruistic, like meaning that they are strangers that come forward willing to donate to a stranger. And sometimes they meet the person that they donate to and sometimes they don't. I mean if you or someone you loved needed a liver, anyone, you know, almost anyone would do this unless they couldn't. So I know that I am trying to, you know, keep that in mind and just continue to humble myself, because I'm just thankful that I get to play a role in this and that I do get to donate. But my brothers who go over to his house and mow his grass and help fix things that break in the house because he can no longer do it. My brother who has gone over there to help my grandpa off the floor when he's fallen. I mean, that is the stuff that you don't see. You know, this is a really like glorified, wow, you're donating your a portion of your liver. That is very visible and center stage, I guess. But I think it's really awesome the things that my brothers do for my grandpa. My Grammy does for my grandpa. I mean, she's been taking care of him for the last 7 years. My stepdad, my parents, they are all doing their part. I just think that a lot of that stuff takes a lot more love and compassion and just a servant heart, because it's not the stuff you get recognized for. So shout out to them, because they are awesome. Yeah, and I just want to thank all my friends. There's been a lot of people that have been encouraging me in this process and have been keeping me grounded, and I'm really thankful for you. But I think that is all the prior to surgery stuff that I can think of to share with you. So I will do another episode after the surgery when I can function semi-well and let you know how it's going. But I would say, you know, if you're someone who is thinking about donating, whether to a stranger or to someone you know, I would say go for it. You know, as long as you're doing it for the right reason, you feel like it's something God is blessing, you know, or is leading you to, and you're able to do it in a healthy way, emotionally, spiritually, and physically, then yeah, go for it. It's been a really great experience for me so far, not only to get to help someone that I love and care about, but it's also been really good for me. I mean, I've just been so much healthier because of this. So when you're focusing on something more than just yourself, you greatly benefit. I think we all know that. And I mean, gosh, that's throughout scripture. Jesus teaches us when we focus inward, a lot of times things don't go great, but if we keep our eyes on him and we serve him and we serve others, we really benefit from that. And that's been the coolest thing from this experience. So I'm excited. I'm thankful for your support, and I will be back in touch after. Oh, I did just want to add one last thing. So before the surgery, my grandpa does have to go in and get cleared, basically. So we are scheduled for the 14th, but if they determine that he's not healthy enough yet to undergo surgery, they will push it back. Or if one of us gets COVID, obviously they will push it back. Or if I don't lose the weight in time, they will push it back. So we are hoping and praying for the 14th to be the day, but that is the last step in this process as well, is he has to go in one more time and be cleared by his doctors. So just wanted to throw that out there. Cross your fingers that it happens on the 17th. That's what we're going for. That's what we're counting down to. That's what we're praying for. So I would appreciate that a lot. Thank you guys for listening, and we will be back next time. Hey friends, hope you all enjoyed the show. Feel free to check out the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave a review, leave a rating, subscribe so you don't miss anything. And I hope you will be back and join us in the future.